Other Mapuche communities affected by oil exploitation are Painemil, Nielaiko, Quiñoy Folil, and Catripain. Pioneer, Chevron San Jorge, and Repsoli PF oil companies operate in the lands that belong to these communities.
That piece was produced by Hernán Scandizo, Pablo Indio, and Julia Luisetti. You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Aura Bogado.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. It's just about 7 o'clock, time for a special expanded edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. So Billy Bones was the best expect for worse.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next 2 hours. Yes, we're on for an expanded show tonight, and we only just found out about it about an hour or so ago. So we kind of had to scramble here to get things together, but I think you'll be pleased with what we've come up with. This is basically the middle of the first day, kind of the end of the first day of the WBAI fundraiser for the spring of the year 2005. And the theme for this first week is Voices of Dissent. And I can't think of a better group of people that would typify that particular categorization than a bunch of hackers and phone freaks and mischief makers. What do you think, Barney? You think you fit into that category?
I think most of the people on this show have been probably arrested for dissent, government dissent in one way or another. Isn't that true?
Well, you know, I got arrested just for standing. I wasn't really dissenting. I have been arrested for dissenting in the past, but the most recent arrest... Yeah, I guess I qualify since I can say the most recent arrest. Yeah. And you certainly qualify, Bernie, as a dissenter.
As does our sometime guest, Shapeshifter, and other people as well that... We know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We're here with all kinds of interesting people in the studio. Mike is here, Jim is here, Redbird and Arseny and all kinds of other people will be joining us. Kevin Mitnick will be joining us in just a little while as well. And I guess, you know, he's a dissenter as well and in various ways because he stood up to injustice, not really by choice. He found himself in a situation and wound up standing up for things that I guess he wasn't planning on standing up for. But before we get to him, I just would like to focus on some of the things that have been happening around us in the... today was a very interesting day, for one thing. Remember a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the panic that George W. Bush had, where he had to run into the bomb shelter under the White House? That was because of what, an errant airplane or something like that?
Same as it ever was.
Yeah.
Errant airplane.
He heard that a dissenter was on the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Needed to get out.
Well,
get
today, away from it. Today was even more of a fun scenario, where an airplane actually came within, I think 5 kilometers, is what I saw on the coverage that I was watching, of the White House.
5 kilometers? That's
yeah,
pretty far.
It seems pretty far to me. Like if you were 5 kilometers away from me, you wouldn't be able to hear me.
That would be about.
You were listening to the radio.
3 miles.
Yeah, so apparently, and I don't think they're counting from the ground up to the plane, were they?
Where would they be counting from?
I don't know. It's a Secret Service. You never know what to believe with them. 3 kilometers away from the White House, I assume they mean if the White House went straight up into the air or however far up the plane was, and then over, that was those 5 kilometers. So anyway, today that happened, and all of Washington, D.C. went into this real panic. Now, Bernie, were you aware of the fact that that the White House, first of all, I didn't know the White House had its own color code, just like New York City, but the White House went from yellow to orange and then to red for the first time ever. Red was hit in this country.
Wow.
Red.
Wow.
Yes. Did you hear about this? You didn't hear about this, Bernie?
Do they have those sounds like they have on Star Trek when they go to red alert, it goes, what?
Well, that's good. That's very good. I didn't know you could do that, Bernie, but I don't know. You know, I think you'd have to have access to the executive chambers of the White House to be able to find that out. But I'm sure they have something like that.
If we were only a fly on the wall.
Well, Dick Cheney had to be evacuated.
To another secret undisclosed location?
Yeah. Is that your computer making that noise, Bernie?
Yeah. Actually, that's the red alert sound.
It's pretending to be a phone, I think. Dick Cheney had to be evacuated from the White House, which I assume means put in. Well, actually, no. I saw his limousine tearing off into the streets at like 60 miles an hour. Just, you know, jump into the car and get the hell out of this place. That's what he did.
But the president could stay there? Or
the president was bicycling in Maryland.
Oh, okay.
So he continued to bicycle, and you know, he had to finish the bike ride before he dealt with any other issues.
I think it's about time so that a president showed pro-bicycle anything.
But I don't think that was his intention at all.
Yeah.
I don't.
Was he falling off his bicycle?
That I don't know. I'm sure we'll get video of that later. I do know that Laura Bush and Nancy Reagan, of all people, were in the White House, and they were not evacuated along with Dick Cheney. They were taken to, quote-unquote, a secure location. So, you know, you can read all kinds of things into this. Dick Cheney, got to get him out of here right away. The wives, stick them in the basement. The president, he's bicycling. Okay, just let him be. You know, that's pretty much how the government runs.
The weird thing about this, Emmanuel, is that this Cessna plane apparently was a Cessna 150, which is a really tiny plane. Only two people can ride in this plane, and they both have to weigh 170 pounds or less each. It can only go about 100 miles an hour. It weighs about 1,000 pounds, the whole plane. You know, it's like two or three people could lift the plane off the ground. It's that light.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if one of these things hit a building, it just, you know, it would do almost no damage, and it's not even big enough to carry a bomb of sizable weight to cause much damage. But you would think the radar system around the White House would be able to tell that this was such a tiny little plane.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you hit somebody with the plane, they would probably hurt quite a bit. I mean, if you throw a stone at somebody, that weighs a lot less than 1,000 pounds.
Well, one of these things hit a plane. Where was it? Does anybody remember one of these Cessnas crashed into it? Yeah, it was in Florida, a year or two ago.
Some crazy kid.
Yeah, and it caused, it broke a window in the building. That was about it. It really didn't cause much damage. So, I don't know. It just sounds like they're really paranoid. Now, there's a conspiracy theory going around, which might have some merit, and that is next week Congress was supposed to be considering legislation to revise this. Was supposed to be this temporary no-fly zone around Washington, D.C., which is really a huge zone. It's like miles and miles and miles. And they were supposed to reduce this huge no-fly area and reopen the Reagan International Airport to regular traffic again. And the story going around is that they sort of hyped this particular warning alert just so that they could keep this vast no-fly zone in effect by exaggerating the threat.
So the conspiracy theory is that these guys in the airplane were actually agents of the government?
Well, no, I don't think it goes that far, but who knows at this point. But apparently it was someone who was flying from Lancaster to North Carolina, and they just drew a straight line in the map and just went over that. Well, because the older maps that are more than like 3 or 4 years old don't have – the older aviation maps don't show this huge expanded post 9/11 no-flight zone. So maybe it was just a student who was just not aware of this new. It's only been in effect for what?
How is it though? When you're up in the sky, you know, looking straight ahead, presumably, how do you know when to turn left and when to turn right? Are there signs saying, "Oh, this is a no-fly zone"? Is there some kind of radar that buzzes or something?
Yes, all the ground is painted red where you can't fly.
You see, I think that would be smart. I really do. I think they should also paint the country so you know when you're crossing borders.
And paint the White House red. Make it the Red House.
I thought all flight plans had to be pre-approved, though.
Yeah, but I don't know if they're exact to the foot as to where you're going over. And plus, he might have strayed from his flight path. I guess that's also possible.
You can fly into the zone if you have a flight path that's listed and you have a special transponder that broadcasts continuously your elevation. But apparently a Cessna, these little Cessna 150s don't have that stuff.
So, you know, when I heard about the story, I immediately thought of, you know, United Airlines and the flight attendants, and all those people who are being screwed by their bankruptcy hearings. They lost their pension yesterday. So, you know, if anybody was going to demonstrate in the skies, I would expect it to be somebody affiliated with that. But, you know, it could be something a lot more simple than that particular scenario. So, a bit of fun. The color went all the way up to red. I don't know what that means. It meant a lot of people were running around, panicking, and nobody really knew what was going on. Some people in the White House weren't even told what was happening. Some members of the press, which apparently we'd be better off without in the eyes of the administration.
Hardly the first time that the White House has snubbed the press.
Yeah, but Cheney was out of there like a shot, It's fun to see these things unfold, to watch how they develop, and to sort of figure out, you know, who's making the decisions, where people are being sent. You know, it's kind of educational in that regard.
You can see a lot of it's a lot of impromptu stuff that you see happening, and it's always interesting to see what people pull out of their hats. I remember when Reagan someone attempted to assassinate Ronald Reagan. All these guys in briefcases suddenly whip Uzis out of these briefcases, and it's like, oh, now you get to know what's in those briefcases. It's like
always wondered.
Submachine guns.
That's right.
So I heard our old friend Tom Ridge, former director of Homeland Security. I heard him on the radio this morning. He was recorded earlier this week at a Homeland Security conference, and he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but these are the words he used. He said, "I don't care whether it's a color code or a numeric code or animals." But animals. He was suggesting that maybe we should switch to an animal code as opposed to, you know, like giraffes or lions or whatever. It's just simple. I heard him say this on the radio this morning.
He's been watching
Cobra.
Barney too long.
But, so is it? What happens if you have a giraffe?
Yeah. Well, I think we need to question him a little bit more to find out what that means. What I'm curious about, though, is the color code, and I don't want to spend too much more time on this because it is kind of silly, but the color code for the White House, is that related to Homeland Security or is that their own little color code? I was watching the press conference today, and there was some confusion about this among members of the press, and they were told that actually the Secret Service has its own color code that's existed since before 9/11. One of the members of the press asked if it was different colors. No, same colors, just different system. So they have the exact same colors, but they've been using them for ages longer, apparently. So that's what got changed today. That's what got changed. Went from yellow to orange to red. I don't know what's supposed to happen at red.
Red alert.
Yeah, and all those fun sounds. One of the more pressing issues came out of D.C. this week as well, and that was the whole Real ID initiative. Have you guys been following this?
Somewhat.
Yeah. And Bernie, I know you've been following this.
Yeah, we mentioned it briefly on last week's show, and it did pass, I believe, yesterday. It was signed into law.
It was close, though. I mean, there was, you know, debate. It
100
was,
to 1. 100? 100 to 0.
100 to 0. Yes. All right.
It reminded me of the Patriot Act, which was passed, 99 to 1.
Wasn't that passed by voice vote? Well, no, that was the DMCA. Never mind. So many things. You just can't keep up with them all. Okay, so what is this Real ID business?
The CALEA Act was passed without any... Whatever.
As far as the Real ID thing, why should we be concerned about this?
Well, basically, it effectively creates a federal ID card system where, you know, you used to think of countries like in Eastern Europe where you know, it's difficult to travel without your federal government papers. Well, the federal government has now basically dictated standards that all states must comply with, including biometric standards, as I mentioned last week, that all state ID cards, including driver's licenses, must comply with. And there's a lot of dangers for this, you know, not the least of which is when you have a huge database like this, it's more subject to abuse. The cards will be able to be read by third parties, like, you know, commercial entities. You go to a bar, you have to swipe your card to prove how old you are. And then they get all the other information, the biometric data off your card, et cetera. Doesn't seem to be well thought out, and frankly, it's not really going to help with security that much because the terrorists all had real IDs from states anyway. So I think this is just another way for the government to try to keep track of people that, frankly, people who are concerned about privacy would have issue with.
Well, okay, now that's what I'm questioning here, because we have driver's licenses in all the states. All 50 states have different versions of driver's licenses. Now, what this is basically doing is making all of that into the same version, one particular type of driver's license. Now, does it go any further than just that?
Well, it's vague as far as what the requirements are going to be. They left it wide open as far as saying, okay, well, these aren't all the requirements, and there are no set standards for what the data is going to be encoded with. Are they going to have a magnetic stripe? Are they going to have RFID? Are they going to have a 2D barcode? This is all left open, so.
Uh-huh. Well, at what point does that get addressed?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what we should be focusing on, because I think it's kind of inevitable that things will be standardized and people will start using the same types of IDs in different parts of the country. I don't know if that necessarily is the threat. The threat is obviously what they're putting onto this ID, if they're putting your social security number on there, if we're required to carry our ID cards with us when we're not driving cars. Now, that's something that I have not seen any indication of this in the Real ID legislation. Has anybody suggested that people who don't drive cars are going to be required to carry these things, or that people are required to carry them when they're not driving cars?
If you want to enter a federal building, you will have to be carrying one of these cards or some other acceptable form of ID, like a passport.
Well, my passport doesn't have an address on it, so that seems perfectly okay to me.
I frequently show my passport when I want to protect my privacy compared to showing the driver's license or something, because it doesn't have my address or social security number or other stuff on it. And people take issue with that. I'm like, well, guess what? This is federal ID, and it doesn't get any better than that.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've never had trouble showing my passport. People, in fact, are impressed, because you get to hold it up like you're a cop or something, and they take a step back, and they treat you with respect.
Of course, a lot of places that are demanding ID will accept just about anything that you give them. Today, to enter the building, they made me show an ID, and I gave them this card, which I made myself, and it does have my real name on it, but it's just a coincidence.
I heard a great story from one of our listeners, actually. He had to take an SAT test last weekend, and apparently the school ID is not sufficient. You're not able to be recognized just based on the school ID alone. And he didn't have any kind of other ID, so he had to actually make a fake ID that would be acceptable. And I don't know if he actually did that in the end, but it's just really silly that all these ID requirements are being made, and they're very easy to get around. They don't really prove anything.
We were talking about all the different forms of data that are going to be put on IDs nationwide under this act, but what people may or may not realize is that a lot of this information is already on licenses in different states. In New York State, for instance, they have this giant two-dimensional barcode, also apparently in New Jersey, Redbird is showing me, which has all this data, and it's really kind of hard to know what it says unless you're a barcode reader. But there's a website called the Swipe Project that we've discussed before. It's not maybe a year or two ago, where you can scan in your license, and it will decode your barcode for you. Or if you don't have access to a scanner, there's also a very informative chart by state showing what each state puts on its driver's license. So it's an interesting resource.
Well, obviously, if this thing becomes standardized to the point where everybody has to carry a particular form of ID, we're going to try and figure out all kinds of ways around it and ways to completely render the system ineffective, because that's just what we do. We're such dissidents, right? And that is the theme of this pledge drive, dissidents. Well, not dissidents of the sort that, you know, is bad noise, that kind of thing. No, dissenting. Yeah. One of the proudest moments of my life was when Bruce Sterling compared me to Vaclav Havel and called me a dissident in my own country, which I thought was really kind of cool. I don't think I deserved it. I mean, you know, as a compliment, I don't think I deserved it. But I realize that we are all opposing various things that are going on around us in our own little ways. You know, we don't go into the world of computers and telephones saying, I'm going to make a stand, I'm going to stand up against this particular oppression that happens around me. That comes to you afterwards. You know, when you're actually doing what you're interested in, all of a sudden you realize that, hey, I'm violating about 50 laws just by doing something that I like doing. And that's when you start realizing that there's more to this than just playing around with technology. And somehow we've been thrust into the position where we tell people about the various things that happen in the world and how it's changing and how it's becoming more and more restrictive. So it's a lot easier to be a dissident these days.
I guess that's good news.
I think it is. I think it is, as long as people realize that it's a healthy thing to question, to stand up against what's going on around you, and you don't self-censor, which, you know, a lot of people do. Now, Bernie, of course, you're definitely a dissident. You certainly paid the price years ago.
And subsequently, too. I've been visited by the Secret Service just for trying to find out more information about their plans for political conventions and how to handle dissenters at conventions. I had Secret Service agents stop by my office and talk to my employer in a rather ominous tone, apparently trying to get me fired, but it backfired on them. And, you know, all I was trying to find out information. In fact, I went to a meeting live on this show to broadcast information about the Secret Service's plans here in Philadelphia to deal with dissenters during the 2000 Republican National Convention.
I remember that. You were hustled out of the building live on the air, weren't you?
Planning stage. I was sort of escorted out. But I was there for a while, and it didn't take kindly to my crashing little party, and decided to pay me a visit. So that's the kind of thing that people can face. I think most people probably would have been fired at that point if the Secret Service came in and started saying things to their employer that might not be complimentary.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, I have a very open-minded employer.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't have that luxury. A lot of people have parents that will condemn their kids if they get into any sort of trouble whatsoever and won't understand why it might not be such a bad thing, what it is they're doing. So, yeah, having that support network is essential. And that's something that I've learned by doing this show and by working on the magazine, is that the more of us there are, the more we can bounce things off of each other, and you feel like you're not alone. And it's not something that, you know, you have to be ashamed of, the fact that you get into trouble by asking questions or by being someplace you're not supposed to be. So, yeah, it's definitely a good thing. Bernie, I'd like to get more into your story a little bit later, since we do have 2 hours tonight. Maybe we can sum up some of the highlights of the various adventures you've been through. I know there's been more than one. Jim, of course, you've been through the mill on a number of instances because you work for the Metropolitan Transit Authority, the people that run our glorious subways here in New York. And I guess you were asking a few too many questions, or just experimenting a little too much or something.
Yeah, essentially I was experimenting a little too much, and they essentially lumped me together with other people who were experimenting and people who were blatantly defrauding the Transit Authority, and I ended up copping a plea, and that sort of changed things.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people do have to plead guilty to something to get the whole thing over with. In fact, you know, that's something that Kevin had to do. That's something Fiber Optic had to do. You know, Bernie, in your particular case.
Yeah, well, it's kind of it's easy for people to say, well, you shouldn't plead guilty if you don't feel you did anything wrong. But when you're being held against your will, basically in a cage for months after month after month, you begin to realize that, well, if I just go with the flow, I can just be done with this thing. And I know it sounds like a cop-out, but, you know, until you've walked in those shoes, it might be wise to reserve judgment on that sort of a thing. As it was, I never admitted to having in fact, I was never even charged or alleged to have defrauded anyone or even attempted to defraud or anyone or any company, but just the possession of technology that could have been used for that, even though it had legitimate purposes, was enough for Secret Service to get a conviction. And frankly, that was not the whole reason, according to the prosecutor, why I was being held in the first place. But we could get into that later.
Yeah, quite a lot of interesting stories. And we've talked about them all here on this particular radio program over the years. And boy, you know, what a time capsule it all is. You know, we started this show back in 1988. Actually, that was the first ever show. It was kind of like a special, 1988. And the show became a series, I believe, in 1991, and continued from there. And throughout it all, we've been following all kinds of stories, not only the changing of technology, but the various cases that have come about as a result of people playing with technology, hackers that have been raided, people who have been sent to prison, other things going on in other countries, very often affecting people right here in this room. So it's fascinating. It's fascinating to listen to all that, and that's part of the fun of doing radio, is that you can go back and you can listen to that all. What I'm trying to do now is tie this into what we're offering here tonight during our special fun drive. Now, I know a lot of people listen to the program week after week, year after year, and it's great to have you there. But did you ever think what a weird place this is, WBAI, the place where you hear all kinds of different voices talking about all sorts of different issues that you might not hear about anyplace else? This place is an anomaly. It's not something you will find in other places, and something that is always, ever since we started back in, I believe, 1960, something that has always been on the endangered species list. Why is that? Because, we're not part of that mega media conglomerate that owns just about every radio station in the world, or at least in this country. We depend on listeners. And if our listeners are not there, then we will not be there. Simple as that. We don't have commercials. Not that anybody would advertise with the kinds of things we say. But we like to think of our listeners as our sponsors. Because by investing in us, you're investing in our future. All right, that said, we have a number of different things that we're offering tonight to help ease the pain of donating to the radio station. Now, obviously, you know, if you're really into the radio station, you should just pick up the phone, 212-209-2950, and make a pledge, regardless of all the nice things that we're going to give you in return. Regardless of that, that should be paramount. If that's in your head already, good. Listen to the things that we have, because hopefully that will make things just a tad bit easier. For every pledge, $25 and above, you will get an off-the-hook T-shirt. That's right, an off-the-hook T-shirt. Now, you won't find these online on our internet store because we don't offer it. We only offer it during pledge drives. Does anybody have one? All right, I'll hold it up to the microphone so everybody can see. This is a really kind of cool shirt. It says Off the Hook on it. It has the time and the station that the show is on. And I guess if that ever changes, we'll have to change the shirt. But it's held for a number of years.
It's a black shirt for our stereotypical hackers who wear nothing else.
Yeah.
Black T-shirt.
It's really cool. It's really cool. You wear that, and people know that you're somebody with a brain. And not only that, but you're kind of a walking billboard for the show as well. So we're advertising the show and getting out there, and more people will come aboard and listen. That's for a pledge of $25 and above. Now, we also have, I was mentioning, listening to the radio show. We have put all of the shows are online for one thing, but we've also crammed them all onto a single DVD. And we are offering that DVD with every single show from 1988 to the end of 2004 for a combined pledge of $75. So you'll get that, and you'll get the off-the-hook T-shirt for a pledge of $75.
How many shows is that?
That's
a lot of shows.
That's a lot. It really is. It's a ridiculous amount of shows. Now, you know, you can download all of these, of course, but it'll take you a very long time to do that, which is why we offer it in one piece like this. And actually, I should point out something else, too. I say it's one DVD. I'm actually lying, because, yes, we have put this out on a single DVD. It's called a dual-layer DVD. Some people are having problems with that format because older DVD drives don't read dual-level DVDs very well. Okay, so what we're doing is we're splitting it into two. We're actually going to make this two DVDs, so you'll get two DVDs instead of just one, and that way you're ensured that it will work on your DVD drive or computer or whatnot. That's for a pledge of $75. It goes on. It gets better. For a pledge of $100, this is where you have a choice of two different things. We made a movie a few years ago called Freedom Downtime. And a couple of years after the movie came out, we put it out on DVD. And the DVD has all kinds of extra features and Easter eggs, interviews, all sorts of fun stuff. And not only that, but the DVD is signed by myself and Kevin Mitnick. So right there, it's been devalued by us scrolling our names on it. And it's two different DVDs, too. It's a dual DVD set. Not a dual-layer DVD, although it probably is that, too. But it's a double DVD set, two DVDs, and we signed our names on both of them. That's right. So for a pledge of $100,
you got a total of 4 signatures.
Yeah.
Two from each
person. That's right.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
More ink.
So yeah, for a pledge of $100, you get that in addition to the other two things. Before that, the Off the Hook DVD and the Off the Hook T-shirt.
Emmanuel, I did some quick math, and if you have most of the shows from 1988 through 2004, mm-hmm. is that what you said?
Yeah, all the shows.
That comes close to 800 shows.
That means we must be having a 1,000th show coming up some point. I guess we can get our calculators out and figure that out at some point.
The people that calculated that countdown thing in the park the other week could probably work on this project also.
Yeah.
Well, I did some math too, and Emmanuel said we got regular in 1991 and had shows weekly from that point on. But that means that for a pledge of $75, that's only 15 cents a show. Even at our worst shows, I think it's worth more than 15 cents a show.
Yeah, that's something. Never thought of it that way, but yeah, I guess that does hold true. Now, there is also a brand new book out by Kevin Mitnick called The Art of Intrusion. And Kevin's going to be on in just a few minutes, and he'll be discussing the book and various other things that he's been up to. Now, you can, instead of the Freedom Downtime DVD, for $100, get a copy of The Art of Intrusion signed by Kevin. That's for a pledge of $100, in addition to the Off the Hook DVD and the Off the Hook T-shirt.
It's a tough choice.
212-209-2950. Now, for the person who needs to have everything, $150 gets you the whole works. Freedom Downtime DVD, The Art of Intrusion book, both signed, the Off the Hook complete DVD set, and the Off the Hook T-shirt for a pledge of $150. 212-209-2950. Let's get some calls coming in because we do need to keep this place going. That's what it's all about. We donate what we can to make things easier, but in the end, we need those people to call in. 212-209-2950. Yes, Jim.
You know, if these people out there listening, our fans, our loyal fans, need more incentive. If you get the DVD of Freedom Downtime,
mm-hmm.
you can enter the 2600 Easter Egg Hunt.
That's right.
Yes.
The 2600 Easter Egg Hunt. What is that all about, Jim?
Well, you know, I read something by Emmanuel. Oh, my goodness, that would be you. In the last issue of the magazine, the Easter Egg Hunt on DVDs, they have what are known as Easter Eggs, which is when you click on certain portions of the screen, or sometimes you don't click.
But Jim, Easter has already passed.
Yeah,
well, it doesn't matter. These are just called Easter Eggs, and besides, Fabergé eggs are forever, are they not?
All right, well, you're straying way off the subject.
Yes, we are, but it's Mike's fault.
212-209-2950. Continue with your discussion of Easter eggs, as we have three calls on the line.
They're cute little things, witty things that you find on DVDs. Games, hidden games, hidden puns, hidden slogans, hidden signs, hidden visuals, hidden audio, hidden whatever.
And we have more of that than any DVD set ever put out. And I'm not afraid to stand up and say that, because I don't think there's any other DVD out there that has more Easter eggs than this particular one. And if you win the Easter egg contest, Jim, what happens?
You're a very happy person. But you get things.
You get lots of things. Yeah, I think you get a lifetime subscription to the magazine and all the back issues.
All the back issues.
Everything we sell.
And a piece of every item of clothing sold.
Mm-hmm. But you can't do it if you don't have the DVD. You know,
no, you don't.
If you just look at the data on the DVD and say, well, this is an Easter egg, that's not good enough, because you have to tell us how you got it. That's what's important. And the deadline is September 1st.
Right.
And details are on our website, www.2600.com, and in the magazine, which you can find all over the place.
But if you don't have the DVD, mm-hmm. how can you look for the Easter eggs?
We have 6 calls on the line, and hopefully many of those people are interested in the DVD and the book and the Off the Hook collection and the T-shirt. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff we're offering, but keep in mind the reason why we're doing this is because without this voice, without this radio station, we don't have very much to go with. The internet is fine, but a 50,000-watt radio station in the middle of New York City, that's really fine. That's something that needs to be preserved.
And think of it this way. What other radio show on this station during Pledge Week would give you a chance to make more than your pledge back? You pledge and get the DVD, mm-hmm. and not only do you have this wonderful DVD, but you have a chance to get a lot more valuable stuff. at no extra cost.
Well, yeah, I don't want to sound too capitalistic here, but I guess that's the kind of thing that appeals to you fine. Keep in mind also that you're getting things which we consider to be of quality, you know, all kinds of interesting discussions,
intangible
all sorts of
things.
A documentary that tells you all kinds of interesting stories about the hacker world and just how these dissidents of the electronic age have dealt with certain issues. It's a story about the Kevin Mitnick saga that we'll get into in a little bit as well. 2 hours that basically go over the period of time when he was imprisoned and all kinds of other things as well. That's the Freedom Downtime DVD. The book, Kevin will be discussing the book in just a little bit. And, of course, the shows where we talk about all these things week after week. Now, I remember, Bernie, when you were languishing in prison in Pennsylvania, you somehow were able to call the radio station and talk to us week after week. And it was simply unbelievable. You know, the sounds of the prisoners in the background, the horrible noises that you'd constantly be hearing all the time, which you must have had to deal with 24 hours a day. Have you been able to listen to those radio shows yourself, Bernie?
Actually, I've thought about doing it, and I've dissuaded myself. It's just I don't want to hear it again, honestly.
Yeah, some of it is pretty painful. In fact, there was that one instance, and let me give the phone number again, 212-209-2950. We have a good number of calls there, but please, as many people as possible calling in is definitely a good thing for this place. There was a period where, towards the end, you were savagely beaten by somebody in prison, and you had your jaw wired shut, you were in a hospital bed. Somehow, you were able to call us after all of that had happened to you. We were worried sick, wondering what condition you were in. They weren't telling us anything. And, I just heard that show actually a few weeks ago, and it was really disturbing. It was really disturbing just hearing how much they had done to you, yet you were able to somehow persist. And I think that's how you get into trouble all the time, because you persist. You keep asking the questions. You keep coming back. You keep doing what they tell you not to do. And they try and put you down however they can, but you got through that time, you know?
As the warden very well put it, aptly put it, during that particular part of my ordeal, he said to me on the phone, as I was explaining to him how he's not going to have a choice about whether I can contact friends and family members about my condition, he said, "You're making us look like a bunch of assholes." And I hope I can say that on the air, but that's what the warden said.
Yeah, that's one of the words I think you can say. But, and the thing is, they were making themselves look like that in the first place.
I told him he didn't need any help.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely not. Now, what happened after that, and I think, you know, it was probably a result of a lot of the action that was going on here on this radio station. They just suddenly released you. It was really, really kind of weird.
Well, as the warden also later said, please, make your people stop calling our phone and fax lines. We can't get any phone calls through. So I appreciate everyone who basically tied up the prison's phone and fax lines on my behalf, because apparently made a difference. They just wanted to just rid themselves of the problem by releasing me, even though I had been there months past my official parole date. Mysteriously, my papers would always end up at the bottom of the pile. So with the support of WPI listeners, I finally got myself out of a pretty horrible physical situation.
Yeah,
and forever grateful.
And that just shows you the power that we all have if we think together and act together and have something, some kind of a clearinghouse where there's information coming your way to let you know what's going on. I like to think that we've served that interest over the past few years, past couple of decades actually almost. But we could never have done any of that without the listeners who have been there in the past and the listeners who are here now helping us to keep the station going, keep the station on the air. This couldn't have happened on a commercial radio station. No way they would not have allowed it. The Secret Service called this place trying to get us to stop, and they were told basically that you can't do that. That happens more than you might think, where authorities pressure journalists, pressure radio people, pressure anybody to not do what it is they're doing. And most cases it works. Here it does not. And that's because we know that our listeners are there for us, and we don't have to worry about losing sponsors. 212-209-2950. Please don't let us down on that, because without our sponsors, our listeners, we really are nothing.
You know, you talked about the Secret Service calling the radio station and asking for this programming to be stopped. But what happens, in addition to ignoring that threat, what a lot of these commercial radio stations do, they don't even wait for the call from the Secret Service. They know what the Secret Service is going to object to. They know what mm-hmm. the folks in power are going to object to, and they don't say it. They don't need to be called. And this is the sort of thing that WBAI, since its inception, has been not doing. We say what they don't want us to say, and sometimes it's utterly inane, but a lot of times it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want that sort of freedom to be able to say these things on FM radio in the middle of Manhattan to continue, you really we appreciate your pledge today.
212-209-2950. And again, we're offering all kinds of interesting things, hacker related things. But there are other things, too, at the radio station. If for some reason you find yourself listening and you have no interest whatsoever in hacker stuff, call anyway, and there's other things that that the friendly volunteers picking up the phone will be able to help you with. But for those of you who are interested in the kinds of things that we've been talking about over the years, we have all different pledge levels. Everybody pledging $25 and above gets a really spiffy off-the-hook T-shirt. For 75 and above, you get the Off the Hook DVD, which contains all of our shows from the first one in 1988 to the end of 2004. For $150, you get Freedom Downtime DVD and Kevin Mitnick's new book, all of which are autographed, and you also get the Off the Hook DVD and the T-shirt as well. And for $100, you get to choose between one of those, the book or the DVD. A lot of different levels, a lot of different items, and hopefully a lot of calls. We have five calls on the line right now, and I know there are more than five people down there in the tally room. In fact, Arseny ran down there to answer phones, so you might wind up speaking to one of us on the air, on the phone down there, if you give a call. 212-209-2950. Let's see how many we can bring in. Six now, okay. We can make that 10.
I mean, even if you don't talk to one of us, all the volunteers are very interesting people.
That's right, and some people prefer not to talk to us. I've known many people like that over the years. 212-209-2950. But with every call, we move ever closer to the goals. The goal for this particular fundraiser for the entire radio station is a staggering $1.1 million. Now, that's a lot of money to many of us, but it's nothing compared to the budgets of commercial radio stations. So while it may sound unpleasant to be begging for money on the air, when you realize that we have three of these things a year, and we bring in about $1 million each time, you can run a radio station on $3 million a year? That's unbelievable, but we do it. We've been doing it since the 60s, and we're going to continue to do it with your help.
And here's the thing. I mean, I don't even know what you get for the millions and millions of dollars that other radio stations spend. I mean, the programming is not any better. In fact, the programming a lot of times is just filler in between the ads, which are the real product on commercial radio.
What a lot of people don't realize when they listen to commercial radio is they're really paying for that as part of the cost of any of the commercial products and services that are advertised on commercial radio stations, or TV stations for that matter. So you're really paying a lot more out of your own pocket for the cost of that advertising, which you're also subjected to on the air, which you're not subjected to on WBAI. So you could really save money by just contributing to BAI and listening to it, not be subjected to commercial advertising, and try to stay away from commercial products that manufacturers of commercial products who support commercial radio stations, because it's something that you could probably avoid without too much trouble if you tried.
I mean, again, these commercial radio stations, the product that they produce on commercial radio is not programming. What they have is ads, and in order to get people to listen to the ads, they put somewhat interesting programming every once in a while, or programming that some people think is interesting. But there's no diversity. There's no room for experimentation in that format. Because if they try something experimental and it doesn't work, their product, which is the advertisers, pull out. They go away. Whereas with WBAI, if we do a show and maybe it's not so good, it doesn't matter. We either try it or we stop trying. And this kind of freedom to experiment, there's no other station that would even try putting hackers on the air because they wouldn't know if it would work or not, except WBAI. And, you know, if we really appreciate your support, again, the number, 212-209-2950. We have all these wonderful premiums that we've talked about, but the real premium is the station itself continuing.
Yeah, and over...
Okay.
You were saying, Bernie?
I was just saying, very well said. The station itself is the premium.
That's very true. And you know, occasionally we get complaints saying, you guys always seem to be asking for money. Well, if you divvy it up, you can either listen to commercials 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year on the commercial radio station, or you listen to us. If we're the only show you listen to, you hear us do it for 3, at the most 6 hours a year, and we're not doing it all the way through the show. We've done it for about 6-7 minutes now. We'll do it for another 6-7 minutes in about an hour. And that's it. 14 minutes in one show.
Well, yeah.
You get that 14 minutes in every commercial show you listen to.
And you don't have a choice. You don't have a choice because you have to pay for everything you buy has advertising included in the price somehow. So not only are you barraged with commercials everywhere you go, whether it's print commercials or radio or television or even in the movies now, you have to pay for it when you buy whatever it is they're selling because they've got to pay for all this advertising that goes to these commercial entities. It's horrible. And here, we don't expose you to that. Yeah, we expose you to this every now and then. But I think most listeners understand that. I get very few complaints from people that say, boy, I hate when you guys are asking for money. I think they understand why we have to do this. And I also think for the most part, here at the radio station, we try to make it as pleasant as possible and we try to inject as much interesting programming as possible. Again, 212-209-2950. Let's get one more flurry of calls, before we go to our next guest. Again, for a pledge of $25, you will get an off-the-hook T-shirt, which you can wear proudly around your particular neighborhood or institution, and answer any questions that people might ask you as far as what is this radio show that you listen to and what is this radio station upon which it airs. For a pledge of $75, you will get every single show that we've ever done from 1988 to the end of 2004. It won't include this one because, well, you know, we can't put it on the DVD. All right, you understand that. But until the end of 2004, it's a lot of them. It'll take you many, many days to download them all from the Internet, so this is a way to quickly have them all with you at all times. Sometimes you might need to reference something quickly. And people have done that, too. I'm not joking. People have used our radio program to learn more about various things in the past. They want to hear what a particular phone switch sounds like. They can go back to 1992 and hear it. So for a pledge of $75, you'll get that and the T-shirt. 212-209-2950. For a pledge of $100, you'll get your choice of either the Freedom Downtime DVD, which is signed by myself and Kevin Mitnick. Freedom Downtime being the 2-hour documentary that we made a couple of years ago about the Kevin Mitnick story. And the DVD includes another couple of hours, actually I think another 3 hours, of lost scenes, interviews, various other things that weren't included in the original release. And again, as for a pledge of $100, you can choose that, or you can get the new Kevin Mitnick book, The Art of Intrusion, which is signed by Kevin. And for a pledge of $150, you can get everything. You can get the book, you can get the DVD, you can get the off-the-hook DVD and the off-the-hook T-shirt. 212-209-2950. We have 5 calls on the line right now. Let's add a few to that, and then we can go right into our next feature. Where do we go from here?
There's no place to go but up, I think.
That implies that we're pretty far down.
No. That was an open leading statement you are choosing to ignore.
Well, one of my favorite parts of doing this kind of a thing, and yeah, I do have my favorite parts of begging for money on the air, is looking up at the little calculator thing that we have here. Over the years, this is the system we've used. We have a little closed circuit camera, and we focus on a calculator in another room, and that's our tally. Other radio stations might spend thousands of dollars on a more sophisticated system, but that's our system.
Everyone, when they see the system for the first time, says, there has to be a better way. This is insane that you have a camera looking at a calculator. But no one has been able to come up with an actually better way.
And what's more interesting is this is so much high-tech than the previous system, which was a camera focused on a blackboard.
Yeah, we never had that.
Joking.
We had a blackboard, I think, but everything was in the same room, but that was back in the 1930s. 212-209-2950. But what I was saying was, I like looking up there and seeing that, oh my God, we only have $250 right now. I know that's because they haven't had a chance to update the calculator yet, you know, because they're answering phones. So the more you guys call in, the bigger the thrill for us when they finally do have a lull and they're able to enter all those numbers. And then we look up and all of a sudden it's like, you know, several thousand dollars.
It makes us feel like Jerry Lewis at the Muscular Dystrophy Telethon.
Well, I wouldn't have used quite that analogy, but yeah, you know, it makes us feel pretty good as far as, you know, knowing that there are people out there and they care enough to call in and pledge some support for this place. Now, again, we take credit cards. We take all kinds of credit cards. We take Visa, MasterCard, American Express. We might even take Discover. You have to check on that one.
If you have a Discover card, now's your chance to use it.
That's right. 212-209-2950.
We'd like to point out, no hackers touch your credit cards.
No. Well, first of all, that's not what hacking is about. That's mass media hacking. Has to do with things like that. Hopefully, if you listen to the radio show, you know that already. But we're always here to inform people as to just what hacking is all about. 212-209-2950.
If you don't have, by the way, a credit card, they'll send you a bill and you can mail a check.
So that's right. You can mail a check. Some people even show up to the radio station cash in hand. That's how much it means to them. They take a trip all the way down here because they want to support the station that much. It's really cool, and we would not be anywhere without our listeners. 212-209-2950. That's our phone number. You're listening to an extended edition of Off the Hook. We're on until 9 o'clock tonight. Emmanuel Goldstein here with a cast of lots of interesting people. We have Redbird. We have Mike. We have Jim. And we have Bernie S. Joining us now on the telephone from St. Louis, Kevin Mitnick. Kevin, how you doing?
All right, Emmanuel. How are you?
Pretty good. Now, you're in St. Louis giving talks, and I assume signing your book, because that's all you seem to be doing these days is signing that book.
This is the older book. I did a talk on the Art of Deception book, so I arrived in St. Louis last night, and I go back home in the morning. So I'm just here for the, I guess, 1.5 days.
Now, I should point out, yes, this is, I guess, the sequel to your first book was The Art of Deception. And this is The Art of Intrusion. What's the difference?
Well, The Art of Deception really covered, it was fictional stories built really around real events, but the names and places were changed to protect the guilty. And it really illustrated the weaknesses of the human element and how it's so easy for anyone to break into systems by just simply calling up somebody over the telephone or sending an email and so forth. The new book, The Art of Intrusion, is really a collection of stories that were written by myself and my co-author, Bill Simon, after interviewing a number of current Black Hat and former Black Hat hackers who were breaking into systems illegally. So after interviewing, I'd say, about 100 to 125, we picked the stories that either were the most entertaining or where the target was the most interesting, like if the target was particularly compelling, or where the attack, or where the sophistication of the attack was interesting, because we wanted to demonstrate the number of the clever different attack vectors or points that are used to compromise systems and networks. So after interviewing umpteen people, what we did is we chose, you know, a handful, and we told their stories of what they did, how they did it, why they did it, then at the end of each story we discuss particular countermeasures that companies or consumers can do to minimize the chances the same attack would work against them. So that's kind of the difference. The older book is more fictional stories that illustrate the social engineering, and the newer book is real stories that illustrate a number of different ways of how systems are broken into and how you can stop it.
Now, I remember you were soliciting stories at the Fifth Hope. Did you get much of a response from people at hacker conferences?
Not really.
They were afraid there.
I'm sorry?
They were afraid to
well,
come forward?
I was at CanSec West in Toronto. In Vancouver last year, and I sat down and I heard some very interesting stories. I was taking notes. Then at the end of it, I said, great, I'm going to probably be really highly likely to end up in the book. And then they go, oh, no, you can't tell the story. And I go, what do you mean? And then they'd go, oh, well, we don't want to be kicked out of the system. In other words, I hadn't realized that they were talking about a current attack, you know, into a, you know, this was a large phone company, for example. And then, you know, it was pretty exciting and interesting. And then I couldn't tell the story because they told me not to, so I respected their wishes, of course. And then the reason was is because they were currently into their network, and they didn't want to be locked out.
I see. Interesting.
So, you know, it's just like they didn't give me permission. I couldn't do it.
But you heard a good story, right?
Yeah, it was quite interesting. It was quite interesting, not really the target, but the method that was used in that particular instance. So it was quite eye-opening.
Can you give us an example of one of the stories in the book?
I thought the most interesting was the actual the Las Vegas hack. I don't know if you had an opportunity to take a look at the first chapter, but it's these guys that were kind of stellar programmers, and they decided to take a trip. They actually lived in New York, coincidentally, and they decided to take a trip to Vegas with their girlfriends. And one of the they were all playing video poker, and one of the girlfriends says, hey, you guys know computers. Isn't there something you can do to help us win? So back in their suite, they started brainstorming ideas of how to beat Vegas. So to make a long story short, what they had done is they had purchased a version of the video poker machine that was in several of the casinos that was made in Japan, and they took it back to New York. They took they basically dumped the firmware off the EEPROM, which was, you know, it wasn't even protected. And then they wrote a disassembler themselves, disassembled the code, had identified that the program improperly used what they call a pseudo random number generator. It's basically a random number generator that like chooses the cards, so to speak. And they figured out how they could write a program, and by actually having the machine there, they were able to determine when the random number generator was cycling and at what points it wasn't. So they're able to control it from the outside as a player. So what they were able to do is determine how to sync up with a pseudo random number generator so they could predict precisely what cards would be dealt and when a royal flush would be dealt. So they basically took Vegas for nearly $1 million. It was quite an interesting story. They built a little computer that fit into their shoe, and they were able, you know, they first built this from a breadboard that they purchased at Radio Shack, and they would actually input the cards via binary with their toes in their shoe, and then it would be a vibrator, like out of a Motorola Bravo pager. It would be a vibrator that would give them like a signal of how to play the hand using like a Morse code annotation. It was quite interesting.
Now, the kind of people who told you that story, they weren't worried about coming back to haunt them?
No, because it happened, you know, past the statute of limitations, you know, federal statute of limitations in America for
yeah, but not past the statute of vengeance that the
statute of vengeance, statute of mafia doesn't forget.
Well, I mean, I just would be very worried that you say they took Vegas for over $1 million. That's something that I wouldn't boast about too many places.
Apparently, they actually provided me with some of a code, you know, to you know verify that they were, you know, because don't forget, a lot of people could be trying to social engineer me over the phone. But these guys from my research seemed to be genuine, but there was no 100% confidence level in any case. These guys remained anonymous, too. I interviewed two of the guys that were on the team, but they remained strictly anonymous.
And you won't give out their identities? Well, you probably don't even know their identities.
Well, I have their email addresses, but depending on your level of sophistication, that may or may not be trackable. For example, if even though you use a Hotmail or Yahoo address, if you log in from home, obviously Yahoo and Hotmail keep logs of your IP, and you know once you have the IP or the ISP, you can subpoena that information. So it's quite easy.
Bernie, you're allowed to talk to Kevin now, right? It used to be that the two of you couldn't talk because you were both convicted felons, but I think you're both allowed to talk to each other now, right?
Yes, we're not. Yeah. We're not controlled. However,
okay, then I'll permit it. Go ahead.
Hi, Kevin. You are still not permitted to write about some things in a book that you sell. Isn't that correct?
Well, up until January of 2007, I can't write my autobiography. I can't write the Kevin Mitnick story and profit from it. But the good news is, I've already talked to my current co-author, and we're going to work on the book and get it done, so by the time that date rolls around, we can go ahead and market it or sell it. So I'm going to work on the autobiography, the true story, not the John Markoff version. And that calls into question, I don't know if you've been reading the New York Times lately.
I was just about to bring this up, but go ahead.
About this guy in Sweden, the 16-year-old who allegedly hacked into Cisco and stole a copy of iOS, which is the code that can, the code for their routers. It was interesting because when I was reading this story on the New York Times, I was actually interviewed on CNN yesterday about it, and I go, okay, what's your source material? And they said, oh, there's a big article in the New York Times, so I went to the site, and of course it's written by John Markoff, so, I couldn't, even though I was reading it, to me it was like I was going, well, can this be believed? Because my personal experience with this guy, what is true and what isn't? So it was quite difficult to determine, what's real and what isn't in this case.
Just want to jump in here for a second. We've broken the $2,000 mark, which is great. We usually have gotten over $2,600 by this stage. So people, please, if you are holding off on that pledge, 212-209-2950 and help keep us on schedule. 212-209-2950. Now, I saw this article in yesterday's New York Times, and it had a great title.